We're holding then Bays Amud Aleph, the sixth line, two dots. And the Mishnah said, V'chein Shar Kol Anoshim. He said that not only when a woman is doing Yibum or Chalitza, does she have to wait 3 months after her husband's death to do those. And we talked, and the Gemara had talked previously why that is. Yibum, obviously, because if it turns out that she's pregnant, then no Yibum should have been done, and then it's an Isur Erva. And if it's Chalitza, then we discussed that in some detail what would be the problem. At the beginning of the Perek, we had Rabbi Yochanan, so we had Rav Shlokish saying that Chalitza that takes place while she's pregnant is not even a valid Chalitza. So according to him, obviously, that's the reason. And we said, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who disagrees with that, still, we would say that we gave a couple of reasons why she shouldn't do it within the 3 months. One of them being that if it turns out that no chalitza was necessary, we're going to have to make a public announcement that the chalitza was unnecessary, but people may not hear of that, and she's going to end up marrying a kohen, and people are going to think that a chalitza can marry a kohen. And then we went through various other details and possibilities about what would be the problem in cases where anyway she's possible to a kohen. So anyway, so the Mishnah said the same thing. All other women should not do, should the same way, all other women where there's no Yibum or Chalitza involved, they shouldn't get do Erusin or Nisuin until 3 months have passed after their husband has died or divorced them. So the Gemara says, Bishlema Yibama Kedamaran. So I understand why a Yibama is not allowed to do Yibum or Chalitza, as the Gemara previously explained. What's the problem with a regular woman where there's no Yibum involved? What's the problem with them doing Erusin or Nisuin during the 3 months? So the Gemara says, Amar of Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Mishum de Amar Kro, Liyos v'cholei lekim, ol zarecha v'acharecha. The Pasuk says, Hashem says to Abraham to be a God to you and to your children after you, implying that Hashem is only, that Hashem's Shechina rests only on people who are zarecha v'acharecha, only people who are definitively your children after you, meaning where we know whose child each one is. So therefore, so we want to make sure that we don't mix up. We want to make sure that in each case we know whose child it is, and therefore we need lahabchin ben zaris harishon lezaris shalsheni. We need to be able to distinguish between children of the first husband and of the second husband. So if she remarries within 3 months, she might be pregnant from her first husband, and then so what's going to happen? She has a baby. We don't know, as the Gemara is going to be discussing in a little bit, we don't know whether it's a 9-month baby from the first husband. So she gives birth, let's say, after 7 months, or as the Gemara is going to say soon, 6 and a fraction months. We don't know whether it was from her first husband and it's full 9 months, or whether it's from the second husband and it was a baby born after 6.5 or 7 months, which the Gemara is going to soon say is viable. So therefore, so you're not going to know who the father is, and that prevents the Shechina from resting on the Jewish people, or at least it prevents the Shechina from resting on him. In fact, Rashi brings from a Gemara in Nedarim that the Gemara talks about there about the various kinds of children that are born from different different children that are conceived in different ways that shouldn't have been done, ways which are technically mutar al pi halacha, but still it's not right to do. One of them is called bnei irbuvia, where you don't know who the father is, or you don't know, or the man himself when he was having relations isn't sure which of his wives he's having relations with. And the Gemara mentions over there that such people tend to be modim aposhim. They tend to be rebellious and willful sinners against Hashem, and they get refined out of the Jewish people during the time of Golos. So we want to avoid such things. So therefore we want to make sure to have these 3 months in order to prevent such problems. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rava. So Rava says, I have a contradiction. So if you're telling me the whole reason is because of that, because of Havchana, in order to be able to tell whose child it is, a Braisa says, L'ficha, we learned at the end of the previous parak also, we talked about this matter of Havchana. So we say, L'ficha, therefore, Ger v'giyoris, suppose that you have a Goyish couple where both of them are becoming Gerim together. So Srichim Lahamtim Gimel Chadoshim, they still have to wait 3 months. After their Gerus. So Hochamai Lahavchin Ika. So what Lahavchin is there if it's the same, it's the same couple before, it's the same couple after. So therefore, so no havchana is necessary. And yet we're saying that they need havchana. When we learned this at the end of the previous perek, by the way, now we had in at the end of the previous perek, we had a machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, about are there cases where we say that we don't need to wait for 3 months because we assume that they're going to try to take steps to avoid becoming pregnant. So we said Rabbi Yossi mentions that that point, and then the Gemara mentioned over there that a Giyoris, knowing that she's going to become a Giyoris in the near future, she's going to try to be careful not to become pregnant as a Goita. So Tosfos says that Tosfos makes over there a few distinctions. First of all, what we're talking about over here could be according to the Yehuda, who says, fine, she will try to take those steps, but maybe they weren't very effective. Shemelin is hapcha yapa yapa. Or it could mean even according to the Yossi, if we know she didn't take such steps. And then Tosfos also says there's a difference when she's being nisgayer together with her husband versus when she's being nisgayer as a single woman. As a single woman, fine, she's going to be careful. She knows that she's going to become a geirus, so therefore she'll be careful during those few months before her geirus. Even if she's going to be having relations with somebody outside of marriage, she's going to be careful and then try to avoid becoming pregnant. Whereas when she figures she's going to be in a skyer with her husband, then she figures there's no need for that. It doesn't occur to her the distinction that we're saying over here, that there's going to be a difference between zerash and nizra b'kedusha or not. Well, so that's the answer. So hochinami. So the answer is here there is a distinction. We do have to distinguish between the children who were conceived not in Kedusha when they were still Goyim versus afterwards when they became Jews. So even in the case of a Ger and Geirus together, there is reason to require the three Chod Sheyavchana. Tosfos mentions, by the way, an interesting point over here that there are those who argue that If a goyish couple was previously married and now they both became geirim, maybe they shouldn't stay married after they became geirim, because each of them is likely to reinforce the other's remembrance of the old times, and then they're going to end up going back to goyish. Right? Tosfos says, obviously, from our Gemara, is mashma that that's not the case. It's happened sometimes. It happens nowadays sometimes that there are couples like that where they both become geirim. And they do in fact remain married, and then many of them are in fact good faithful yidden. So that's all one reason why we need the chod she'avchana for all women, and even a ger and geirus, because in the regular case where it's not involving geirus, we have to be able to tell whose child it is, and in the case of a ger and geirus, we have to be able to tell whether the child was conceived while they were goyim or while they were Jews. Rava gives a different reason why we need the three chod she'avchana. Consider, for example, a case not involving geirim, just involving born Jews, where we're going to have like this: if she gets married within the 3 months, and now we have a child where we don't know for sure whether he's the child of the first or the second husband. So in the diagrams in Mara Yavamis, we can refer to diagram 177 and the next couple of diagrams, and we'll see some examples of problems that could occur because of that. So Rava says, Gzeira Shemi Yisa Sachoise Me Aviv. Number one, he may mistakenly end up marrying his sister from his father's side. What's going to happen? In other words, Suppose that Yitzchak and Sarah were married. Now Yitzchak died or divorced Sarah. Sarah remarries Yaakov within the 3 months. Then she has a child, Reuven. We're not sure if Reuven is Yitzchak's son or Yaakov's. What happens though? Because he was raised in Yaakov's household and he was born 7 months after Sarah married Yaakov, people are going to think, and he himself may think, that he's actually Yaakov's son. And then later on, he meets up with Yitzchak's daughter Esther from a different wife. So if he's in fact the son of Sarah and Yaakov, there's no problem marrying her because they don't share any parents in common. Reuben's parents then are Sarah and Yaakov, and Esther's are Yitzchak and this other woman. However, if Reuben is in fact the son of Yitzchak and Sarah, then Esther is a sister from his mother's side, and that would be an Isser Erva. So we don't want that. So that's why we have to have the 3 months in order that we know definitively whether Reuben is in fact Yitzchak's son or whether he's Yaakov's son. That's one example. Another example, Rava continues, where you could have problems if you don't do the 3 months of Havchana. V'yayabim eshes achiv me'imai. Another example, he may end up doing Yibum to his brother, who's only his brother from his mother's side. Namely, here's the next scenario, a diagram 178. So Sarah had previously been married to Yitzchak. Yitzchak died or divorced her. Now what happens is, Yaakov marries Sarah. They have a son, Moshe. Yitzchak was married to Sarah. Now Yaakov is married to Sarah. They have a son, Moshe. Moshe dies without children. Reuben is going to think that he's the son of Yaakov and Sarah. Well, whether he's the son of Sarah doesn't matter, but the point is he figures he's the son of Yaakov. He should do Yibum with Moshe's wife, Miriam. Meanwhile, what's actually the case? Reuben may well be Yitzchak's son, and then it comes out Moshe is his half-brother from his mother's side because they have the same mother, Sarah, but they have different fathers, Yitzchak and Yaakov. That would be Arias, that would be an Erva without the mitzvah, because the mitzvah of Yibum is only for a brother from the father's side. So that's another one. Another one is the Yotzias Imoy Lashuk. Another problem is we may mistakenly think that his mother is allowed to marry out without doing Yibum or Chalitza. Meaning, let's take another case. She was married to Yitzchak and had a child, Aaron, with him. We have two different cases. Yotzias Imoy Lashuk would be, suppose now that we think that Reuben is Yaakov's son. Therefore, we think. So when Sarah was married to Yaakov and Yaakov is childless, we're going to think he's not childless. He has a son. He has a son, Reuben. So therefore, his wife, Sarah, doesn't need Yibum. Meanwhile, really, Sarah does need Yibum because Yaakov died childless and Reuben was actually Yitzchak's son. So we have that problem also. And we have Yifteris Yivimter Lashuk. Another example would be that we might mistakenly think that his sister-in-law is allowed to marry without Yibum, namely the case where Yitzchak and Sarah had another son, Aaron. And so we're going to think then the other way around. We're going to think that all this time, the first three examples, we thought that Reuben is actually Yitzchak's son, and that creates problems. Now we're thinking mistakenly that Reuben might be Yaakov's son, which he might well be. And then what's going to happen is we're going to think, oh, well, then in that case, so Aaron is not my paternal brother. He and I only share the same mother, Sarah. So therefore his wife, and Aaron has no other brothers, and therefore his wife can marry whoever she wants without chalitza or yibum, because there's nobody to do chalitza or yibum with her. Meanwhile, really, Reuben is his brother and should have done chalitza or yibum. So the point is, Rava is saying all of those scenarios are daraisa. This that we were saying before, that we want to make sure that the Shechina should be able to rest on them, Rava is saying, very nice, but that's not a reason to make a blanket rule of 3 months for everybody. But these kinds of considerations that we're saying over here, where you can actually end up with problems daraisa, then you have reason enough to be gozer across the board 3 months. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Chananya. Well, Rav Chananya says, I have a contradiction. In that case, if you're telling me that the reason is because of there might be problems with the marriages afterwards. By the way, Rashi also adds, by the way, that now we said before, now how does that explain by a ger and gioris? On the face of it, if a ger and gioris are converting together, then most of these issues don't apply. So Rashi says it's true, but you do have the one concern involving Eishes Achiv Me'imai, the second scenario that we had over here, diagram 178, that could potentially a problem with a Ger and Gioris as well. Namely, so you could have that So you could have where the ger and giyur, the couple, the ger and giyur, the two of them became gerim at the same time. Now, what if she was pregnant at the time? When the baby is born, they think that it's a 7-month baby, and therefore it was conceived after they converted. Later on, they have another son. Now, that second son ends up marrying and then dying without children. Now, the first son is going to do yibum with his wife, figuring they were both conceived in Kedusha, and therefore it's a regular case of two brothers from the same father. Meanwhile, not necessarily, because the first one was conceived while she was still a goita, she may well have been mizana. She may well have been mizana, and therefore they don't share the same father, and therefore that would be a problem of him marrying his brother, the wife of his brother from his mother's side. So therefore, so Rashi says in that, so out of the four concerns that Rava is bringing up, one of them does apply to one of them does in fact apply to a ger and giyoris as well. Okay, so Masiv Rav Hananya b'chulan ani kodav en mishum takonas erva. So Rav Hananya brings a braisa that says most cases where the Chachamim say that you're not allowed to, that a woman is not allowed to marry or to do yibum, with most of them we say the reason is mishum takonas erva. The reason is to avoid problems of arayas. Many of the cases that we had so far, for example, where we said that they have to do chalitza and not yibum, is because there's a potential of arayas involved over here. V'chan mishum takonas vlad. In this case, when we're talking about the 3 months, the reason is it's not a matter of takonas erva. It's just a matter of to make sure the kid himself to make sure that the kid himself is miyuchas. To be exact, Tosafot says the bechulon, we're talking about the first bechulon refers to takonas erva. The first bechulon refers specifically to a yavama. We're saying all the cases where we have to do chalitza but not yibum, or where we're saying in general that we have to wait 3 months is because that's what we're talking about. Where we have to wait 3 months. Most when it comes to a yavama, in general, the reason is because of takonas erva, because potentially, if she's carrying a child, then she may end up having a healthy child, and it turns out that no yibum was necessary, and then it comes out that the guy was over on the issur of marrying his brother's wife. So by yibum, we say that, the kan, but over here, when it comes to the other women, Mishum Takonas Vlad, we're saying the reason is in order that the kid himself doesn't end up being a suffer. Now, v'im issa, now based on what you, Rav, are saying, kula Mishum Takonas Erva. Then all of them involve takonas erva, because according to Rava's explanation, all these four scenarios that we just described all involve where potentially somebody is marrying an actual erva. For example, in the first example, in diagram 177, we're saying Reuven ends up marrying Esther, not realizing that she's a sister from his father's side, which is an erva, minatoda. So that's not a matter of takonas vlad, it's a matter of takonas erva. So why would the braisa be distinguishing between the two? And the answer is, hi, mishum takonas vlad, deloy lifka buhu erva. You're fine. What it means is, in other words, that we mean that the child shouldn't end up marrying an erva. Meaning, in other words, that when it comes to the usual cases, when we say you have to wait 3 months, the problem is that the wife herself or the husband themselves may end up accidentally being marrying an erva. For example, we'll say in the case of a yavama, so she does yibum within the 3 months, and it turns out that she was pregnant and she's carrying a healthy child. Then it turns out that they were over on the issue of Eishes Och. He married his brother's wife, and she was married to him, so they themselves have been over on an issue erva. What we're saying, even if we accept that what we're answering to and for Rava is, yes, it's true in this case, what we're saying is that there could end up being arayas, but we're not talking about that the couple themselves that gets married within 3 months have a potential problem of arayas. We're saying their children in the next generation have a potential problem with arayas if the original couple married within 3 months. So again, to take the first example in diagram 177, the problem with Sarah getting remarried to Yaakov within 3 months is not that Sarah herself potentially may be marrying an erva. Yaakov is not at all related to her first husband, Yitzchak, and she's definitely validly divorced from Yitzchak, or Yitzchak is dead. The problem is in the next generation that Reuven may end up marrying Esther and she may be his half sister. So it's not a matter. So that's why. So we can still distinguish between takonas erva. And so Rabbi Hananya was thinking that takonas erva means that we make a gzera about the 3 months because of the potential of arayas in any generation. Now what we're answering is that no, the difference the Braisa is making is between erva in the current generation, the people, the woman who's actually getting married now within the 3 months, versus takonas vlad, would be what potentially happens in the next generation when that child grows up and is ready to get married, to make sure that he doesn't accidentally marry an erva, which would be the four scenarios that Rava mentioned. Okay, so the Gemara asks, now let's figure out why we need 3 full months. V'shlema tamtin beiz chadosh v'tinos eloi. I understand why she can't wait 2 months and get married, d'hainu sveika, because then you'd have the exact suffix. Because then you really have the question, is it a 7-month baby from the first one or a 9-month baby from the second one? At this point, the Gemara is assuming that both 7 and 9 months have to be full months. So in other words, 9 months would be 9 full months, 271 days, as the Gemara says elsewhere. And 7 months would be full 7 months. So obviously, if she waits 2 months and she gives birth, then you're going to have a real problem. But why do we make her wait? Why can't she wait 1 month and get married? And then we should be good either way. If she gives birth after 7 months, then fine. We know it's a 7-month baby from the second one. If she gives birth after 8 months, necessarily, then we know it has to be a 9-month baby from. It has to be a 9-month baby. From the first one, because throughout Shas we the Gemara takes it as given that a baby born after an 8-month pregnancy is not viable. So if we see that this baby is viable, then we see that automatically that he must have been born from and especially according to Rava, that the whole problem is only in the next generation. Obviously, that problem is only going to come up only if the kid is viable and grows up and ends up getting married. So according to Rava's explanation, at least. And maybe even according to Reb Nachman's explanation that we need the Shechina to rest on him, he needs to be a viable baby. So if he's born after 8 months, he's anyway not going to be. So if he's born after 7 months since the marriage, then we know for sure that he must be from the second husband. Otherwise, if it was from the first, he wouldn't live. And the Gemara answer is not necessarily. Inami l'tzmanya yolda, not necessarily, because even if she gave birth after 8 months, Ikala Mema de Basruhu, it still conceivably could be from the second husband. Dilma Ishtahuya Ishtaha Khodish Echad Viaba, because there may have been a delay of 1 month and then she became pregnant. In other words, not necessarily did she become pregnant right when they got married. So you could still have so what happens? She gets married after a month, we're saying. So her first husband, let's say, died in Tishrei. She remarries in Cheshvan. Now 7 months after Cheshvan, now eight months after Cheshvan, which brings us to Sivan, she has a baby. Potentially, it could be. So it could be that it could be from the first husband, conceived in Tishrei, shortly before he died or divorced her. Or it could equally well be that it's from the second husband and just she didn't become pregnant until Kislev. There's no law that says she has to become pregnant right there in Cheshvan when they get married. Rashi also adds, for that matter, the Gemara could have equally well answered that, listen, by the same token, he could be a 9-month baby from the first husband anyway, even if there's no delay. Even if she gives birth after 7 months, she gives birth in a year. So who says the conception with the first husband happened the last thing before he died or divorced her? Maybe she became pregnant in Elul, and then from Elul to Iyar is also 9 months. From Av to Iyar is 9 months. But fine, once Rashi just says, listen, once we found a way to say that it's not going to work with a 1 month delay, then the Gemara just sticks to that. Okay, the Gemara asks, "Tamtin shnei chadashim amechta v'tinase." Fine, but why can't? Why does she need full 3 months? Still, she could wait 2.5 months and then get married. De'ila shiva yolda hayba shiva labasru. If then 7 months later she gives birth, then we know it's from the second husband. De'ila shito paugi yolda hayba tisha lakamahu. And if she gives birth after 6.5 months. Then we know it has to have been a 9-month baby from the first one, the Ibar Basruhu Shito Pagaloi Chayi, because at this point, the Gemara is assuming that a 6.5-month pregnancy, the baby wouldn't survive. So why isn't 2.5 months enough? And the Gemara answers no. E nami the shito pauga yolda. No, because actually, even if she does give birth after 6.5 months, ikulamema de basruhu, it is very possible that this baby is actually from the second husband. Now, you have a machlokas in the Gemara in Nida. When we say that a woman gives birth normally after 9 months, does that mean that it has to be full 9 months, like we were saying before, 271 days? Or can it be also, can it be parts of 9 months? Can it be, for example, seven full calendar months and then the end of one at the beginning? Beginning and the beginning of one and the beginning of a month at the end. So can we say that or not? So the machlokes is in Nida about that point. But even if you say that not, even if you say 9 months means full 9 months, full 271 days, nevertheless, yolda lazayin yeletus them kotayin. There's no question that when a woman becomes pregnant and gives birth after 7 months, that doesn't have to be full 7 months. It can be 6 months and a fraction. Shenemar, as we find when Shmuel was born, by Hila Skufre Sayomim, the pasuk says it was in after the Tkufres of days that she became that she gave birth. Therefore, Miut Tkufres Beis, Miut Yomim Beis. The word Tkufres implies the word Tkufres and Yomim are both plural, so they imply two of each. Now, a tkufa is a 3-month period during the year. You have tkufas Nisan, tkufas Tammuz, etc. Each of them lasts 3 months. So tkufas implies two of those, so that's 6 months. And miut yomim beis, and yomim also implies two, meaning that Shmuel was born after a pregnancy of 6 months and 2 days. Says similarly about Moshe Rabbeinu, by the way, that he was also born after an abbreviated pregnancy like that, which is why the Mitzrayim didn't realize right away. It took some time to realize that he'd been born. They were following her pregnancy, but they didn't realize, or they were following when she and then Amram remarried, as the Gemara tells us in Sota. But therefore, since he was born premature, then they didn't know that's how Yocheved was able to hide him for 3 months. Anyway, the point is, so yes, a baby can be born and can be viable after 6 months and a fraction. So therefore, waiting 2.5 months wouldn't be enough because the baby is born at the end of 6.5 months since the remarriage. He might be a 6.5 month baby from the second husband, or he might be a 9 month baby from the first husband. No good. Okay, so the Gemara asks, v'tamtin mashu v'tinase. Okay, so why don't we say that she waits a little bit? Rashi says a week or two. Tosfos says, okay, at least you have to wait 3 days that it would take for fertilization to take place. So why doesn't she do that? V'tinase, and then she gets married. V'chimolu shloisha chadashim livdika. Then, when 3 months pass since her husband died, then at that point we check her and we see, we examine her and we see whether she's pregnant. Because what we assume, in other words, is that when we say that a woman when we say that a woman's pregnancy is recognizable after 3 months, it means not before 3 months. So therefore, so what we do is her first husband died. Let's say she waits, as Rashi says, a week or two, or as Tosfos says, maybe a couple of days. She remarries. Even if she becomes pregnant, right? Even if she was, so she wasn't, we don't know whether she was pregnant from her first husband or not. Now let's say afterwards, at exactly 3 months since her husband died, her first husband, we check her, we examine her, and we see, is she noticeably pregnant right now? Rashi gives an example that we check her breasts, Rashi says. For example, even before she starts showing, still at that point, there'll be a change in the consistency of those or something. So now, if it was from the second husband, 3 full months haven't passed yet. Therefore, if we find at that point that she's showing signs of pregnancy, necessarily it must be from the first husband. Which, by the way, the Aruch HaNer points out in this connection. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin asks the question, what happens if it is a seven-month pregnancy? Is the pregnancy recognizable less than 3 months? Because do we say that it's always one-third of the length of the pregnancy till the effects are noticeable? Well, one-third of 7 months is a lot less than 3 months. Based on our Gemara, apparently not. Based on our Gemara, no matter what the length of the pregnancy, it's always going to be 3 months. Sometimes it can be even more than 3 months. We learned in the Gemara before, we said most women, the pregnancy is recognizable after 3 months. But not all of them, but still, at the end of 3 months, we should be able to check her, and we should be able to see. The answer is, Amar of Safra, Ein Boitkinas and Asuris. The answer is, once the woman is married, we don't want to do such a physical examination, Shalais Ganu Al Balein, because we don't want to make them unattractive to their husbands. Maybe in other words, the fact that he feels like, you know, somebody else has to examine her or feel her up or whatever is going to make her less attractive to him. So we don't want that. So it's true we could in principle do that, but because of that consideration is why we don't want to do that. Okay, so they want to ask the Nivdika Bihimbuka. Fine. So we can do something that doesn't require a physical examination of her body. We can check how she walks. A pregnant woman has heavier steps. So therefore, what we do is let's have her walk in loose dirt if she's pregnant at the end of the 3 weeks. So again, the scenario is we're saying her first husband died. Let her wait a little while, much less than 3 months. Let her remarry. On the 3 month anniversary of her first husband's death, we're going to have her walk on loose dirt, and then we're going to see if we see that her footsteps are noticeably deeper in the dirt than they were beforehand, then we know that she's pregnant, and if not, then not. And then based on that, we can determine, given that it's exactly 3 months since her first husband died, and given that she waited a couple of weeks or a couple of days, whatever, to remarry, then it has to necessarily be from her first husband. The answer is, Omar Rami Bahama Ishima Chapa Atma. The answer is that a woman in this scenario may try to cover up for herself. She may actually try to make her footsteps lighter in this case, in order to make it look like she's pregnant from her second husband, Kadesha Yirash Bunabnikse Baila. In order that her son should eventually inherit from her second husband. She figures she figures she wants, if at all possible, to avoid, in a case like this, to avoid people knowing that she's pregnant. This way, people will think that it's a child from the second husband, and that way he has a Yerusha. Her first husband, let's say, for example, her first husband divorced her. Her first husband died, so his Nechasim have long since been divided up. So there's not going to be, by the time the kid is born, there's not going to be any Yerusha for him. So therefore, she's looking out for him. So she figures she wants to dafka have it, that to let it be thought that it's the son of her second husband in order that her Yarshin. So even if she knows herself that at the end of 3 months since her husband died, she is in fact pregnant, she's going to try. So if we had to actually examine her physically, she wouldn't be able to hide it. But we're saying we don't want to do that. She'll let Tzgana Abayla. But once we're saying that it's a matter of checking her footsteps, she will have to try her hardest to not let her footsteps be that heavy in order that people will think that she's not pregnant yet. And then later on, when she's visibly pregnant, people will think that it's from her second husband. Okay, so the Gemara asks, fine. So all of that is when we don't know yet whether she's pregnant. But sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens that we do know before 3 months that she's pregnant. So hecha de kimlon de muberasi. So suppose we know for a fact that she is pregnant, tinase, then she should be able to marry within the 3 months, because then at that point there's no suffix on the kid. Alama tanya. So why do we learn in a braisa? Lo yisa odem muberas chaveru menekas chaveru. We learned this previously also at the beginning of the parak. A man is not allowed to marry a woman who's pregnant by somebody else or a woman who's nursing a baby from somebody else. The imnasa yotzi v'layachzu elamis. If he married, then he has to divorce her, and he can never remarry her. That was according to the mayor. We said there were other opinions that said the chachamim had said over there that they do have to get divorced, but after the pregnancy or the nursing is over, then they can remarry. Fine, but and the reason is gzeira shematasa ubra sandal. So the answer, rather, this is the answer. So the answer is, it's true that if she's pregnant already, then there's no problem of the child she's carrying, but there is a problem that that baby himself may be damaged. Gzeira shemata also ubra sandal. We make a gzeira, she shouldn't remarry during that time, because the baby may become the baby that she's carrying may become a sandal. Namely, we learned previously, Rashi and Tosfos argue what's going on with you. Rashi learns after she married the second husband and she conceives another child, that second child may grow larger at the expense of the first one, and the first one ends up getting flattened out and becoming a sandal, which is actually a type of flatfish. So now when the babies are born, you have the second one, the one who was conceived second is born healthy, and the first one comes out as this big flat object that used to be a baby and then was flattened out by the pressure from his sibling. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos over there in that Gemara on Lamed Vav Amud Beis says no, because the Gemara tells us elsewhere, once a woman is pregnant, she can't become pregnant again on top of that. Medically, there is actually something once in a great while you have, or where you have such a thing. They call it in medicalese, they call it superfetation, but it's pretty rare. But anyway, Tosfos says that's not what we have to be concerned about. The concern is rather that while they're having relations, as our Gemara is going to say soon over here, he's going to squash her under him, and then the baby is going to get squashed as well. So even if we know that she's pregnant, so there's no concern about the parentage of the child, but still the concern is that the child that she's carrying already may get damaged in the womb. So the Gemara says, Yehochi didei nami. Then in that case, why are we limiting that to, we're saying that a man's not allowed to marry another woman, a woman who's pregnant from a previous husband? The same logic should apply, that he's not allowed to have relations with his own wife when she's pregnant from him, because the baby may get damaged in the same way. So the one answer is that's not a problem, because we learned in the first parak, we had a machlokas about three cases of women where it would be dangerous for them to become pregnant. We said a woman who's already pregnant, we said a woman who's nursing, because then her milk is going to change consistency as it does during pregnancy, and then her first baby isn't going to have what to nurse. And the third one we said was a girl below a certain age, because then within the year before her bas mitzvah, because then we said that she could conceivably become pregnant, but it's dangerous for her. So we had a machloikas, or such women allowed to use moich when they're having relations. Reb Meir had said they are, the Chacham say that not. There we also had a machloikas, Rashi and Tosfos, whether it meant, does it mean that she's allowed to put in some moich before the tashmish to prevent the zera from getting absorbed in? Or does it mean, Tosfos learned that no, it means that she can use some moich afterwards to wipe it up? Whatever the case. So fine. So when it comes to his, when the woman is pregnant from him, and now he's having relations with her during her pregnancy, then fine. According to the mayor, where he says that a pregnant woman is allowed to use moich, then fine, she can use moich, and therefore there's less concern that the child that she's carrying is going to be in danger. According to the Chachamim over there, who don't allow moich in those cases, and they say Hashem will have rachmanus, because shema psoyim Hashem, because when you do something the normal way of doing things, then Hashem will protect you. Well, then also, then we can say the same thing over here. Either way, there's no reason to tell a husband, while your wife is pregnant from you, you're not allowed to have relations with her. You can rely on these things. So the Gemara says, so what? So fine. So if she's pregnant from somebody else also, so if she was previously married and her first husband died or divorced her, isn't it the same thing? Hochanami. So why can't we say the same thing if she's pregnant from a previous husband? So no, you're right. The Gemara says that's not the reason. If we can say moich, then that applies either way, whether she's pregnant from him or from a previous husband. If we say minashamayim yirachmu, same thing. Rather, the reason to distinguish between when she's pregnant from, again, we're talking about over here, let's say that after her first husband dies, we know already that she's pregnant. Sometimes it can happen within the 3 months, we're able to already tell that she's pregnant. So now let's say we know for a fact or let's say, you know, to use the terminology that the Gemara used before, let's say Eliyahu HaNavi came and told us she's pregnant. In modern terms, obviously, it's pretty easy. Let's say, you know, they do an ultrasound and they see for a fact that she's pregnant. So why are we still saying she has to wait 3 months? So now we're saying the reason is because of the danger to the baby, but we're trying to figure out what exactly is the nature of that danger. On the face of it, whatever danger there would be to the baby then would apply equally well if she's pregnant from him, and yet we're not saying that a man is certainly allowed to have relations with his wife while she's pregnant. So rather, ela mishum dochsa. Rather, the reason is because of the pressure when they're having relations. He's on top of her, and there's going to be pressure which can damage the baby. So Gemara says, Yehochi didei nami. Nu, then we're back to the question, isn't there the same potential problem when it's his own baby? So again, why, if we're saying that that's a problem, why he can't marry her while she's pregnant from somebody else, wouldn't the same thing apply, why he can't have relations with her while she's pregnant from him? And the answer is, didei chayis yilavei. The answer is, his own baby, he's going to have rachmanas on. He doesn't want to kill his own baby. So therefore, when he has relations with his wife during her pregnancy, he's going to make sure to do it in a way that doesn't damage the baby. Okay, the Gemara says, "Nu, hochanami chayis alavei." Okay, so even if the baby from somebody else, a normal person doesn't want to kill a baby, so he's going to do the same thing. He'll still also make sure to do it in a way that's not going to damage the baby. So you're back to the question. So what's the difference between the two cases? Ela, no. Rather, the reason why he's not allowed to marry her when she's pregnant, even if we know at the time that he marries her that she's pregnant already, is ela stamu beres leminika kaima. The reason is because in general, when a woman is pregnant, eventually she's going to have the baby and she's going to be nursing it. Well, the problem is duma I abra. What's going to happen is then she may become pregnant or miyakar chalba. Now, when she becomes pregnant, as we said, her milk changes consistency after she gives birth to the second baby. And then the first child is going to end up dying of hunger because he doesn't have milk that the milk that she's giving is not going to suit him. It's not going to help with development. The milk that a woman gives shortly after birth is designed for a newborn. It's not designed for an older baby. They didn't have formula in those days. Well, Gemara is actually going to ask about that in a second, about the equivalent of formula whatever they had, as Gemara is going to say in a second, the equivalent of formula. But right now the assumption is that they're not going to have that. Therefore, the first baby is going to die of hunger because he's not going to have whom to nurse from. So the Gemara asks, Yehochi didei nami. Well, then, isn't this the same problem again? Why are we allowing him to have relations with his wife while she's pregnant from him? Isn't there the same potential problem that she's going to become pregnant with another baby? This is according to Rashi, at least, that she's able to become pregnant while already pregnant with the first one, superfetation, like we just said. According to Tosfos, we would have to say that what we mean is that why is he allowed to have relations with her while she's nursing the first baby? What if she becomes pregnant then? And you have the same problem, especially in those days. They used to nurse until the baby was about 2 years old. So that's plenty of time for her to have another baby in between. The fact is also, when a woman is nursing, generally speaking, she doesn't become pregnant. Generally speaking, her periods are suspended and her ovulation is suspended. But again, not always. It's not guaranteed. So why aren't we concerned about that? And the answer is, the answer is, if it's his own baby, and there's a scenario like that, whereas Rashi says she becomes pregnant after, while still carrying the first one, or as Tosfos would say, that she gives birth, that she becomes pregnant again and gives birth after giving birth to the first one, so then fine, she'll give him, she'll soften for him, so she'll soften for him, she'll use eggs and milk, that was their equivalent of formula in those days, so the first baby won't go hungry because she'll give him formula. So the Gemara says, "Didon nami mamas masalay bebeitz b'cholov." Nu, wouldn't that work even if she's pregnant from a previous husband? So why do we say that that's a problem? And the answer is lo yov labal. The answer is the husband's not necessarily going to give her for that because not his kid. It's one thing we're saying he's not going to go, and we said before he's going to have rachma. He's not going to go so far as he's going to lie on her in a way that's going to kill a kid inside her womb. Fine, that we're not going to do. But right now he's going to figure, the kid doesn't need the kid doesn't really need formula. He's just being finicky or something. It's not his own kid, so he's not going to have as much rachmanos on him to spend extra money on formula. Okay, so the Gemara asks, will it be in the Yoshim? Fine. So then, why don't we say that? So what? Let her go to the Yoshim of her first husband and say, look, this baby that I'm currently nursing is from your brother or son or whatever relative it is that she's taking the based in. My new husband doesn't want to provide formula for him. Right now, my milk is not suitable for him because I just had another baby. So please provide me with money for milk and eggs to prepare formula for my older child. So why can't she do that? I'm gonna buy it. Isha Boisha love of the Bastin. The reason is because she'll be embarrassed to come to Bastin. Well, her rega says, no. So therefore, what's gonna happen is the kid is gonna end up dying of hunger because she's too embarrassed to go and call the Yoshim to Bastin and demand that. She herself is not necessarily making money to be able to do that. And her husband and her new husband were saying doesn't necessarily want to provide it. So now Tosfos in this connection brings that there may be a difference over here whether she was widowed or whether she was divorced. So Tosfos says that after all, the halacha is, we're going to learn it in Ksubas in a few months, Be'ez Hashem, among the things that a woman is required to do for her husband is that the children that she bears for him, she's required to nurse them, with certain exceptions that the Gemara says over there when she's entitled to tell him to hire a wet nurse. But ordinarily, one of her responsibilities as his wife is to nurse his children. However, the Gemara says over there, if they're divorced, while the baby is still nursing, that she's not required to. So Tosfos brings over here. So therefore, maybe it would be different over here in our case, and we'd say that she would be able to get married during the 3 months. On the other hand, Tosfos brings Rabbeinu. So that was Rabbeinu Shimshon says that. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam says that no, there's no difference really. And then he brings from Shiltus that in fact that's the case, regardless the same rules apply. The Ritva also adds that when she's divorced, there's another consideration as well. The Gemara tells us elsewhere, I think also in Ksubas, that a divorced couple, now it sometimes happens that a divorced couple have a case in Beis Din one against the other. However, we don't want them to come to Beis Din together because, after all, they were previously married and there still might be a certain inappropriate closeness between them. In fact, the Gemara says that if a married couple does come to Beis Din, we actually put them in Cheirim for that. Not a married, a divorced couple comes to Beis Din, we actually put them in Cheirim for that. So what happens, therefore, is one of them has to send an agent on their behalf, somebody with power of attorney. Well, in this case, then, when the Gemara ends up saying over here about Lithbein Eliyoshim, so we're talking about she is going to have to send somebody on her behalf. So what we're talking about is, let's say it's not Yoshim. Again, let's say it's that she was divorced. So what would happen is it's not Yoshim, it's her first husband. She's suing and based in for the cost of formula. So again, based on that other Gemara, she can't go herself. Necessarily, she needs to send somebody else. And she's embarrassed to do that. And therefore we have the same problem that her baby is going to go hungry because she's embarrassed to go and get somebody to use power of attorney to go argue on her behalf for the cost of formula. So because of that, is why we're saying even, so again, if we didn't know whether she's pregnant, when she got married, the normal case where we don't know until 3 months, then anyway, she can't get married because of all the considerations that we said before, because we're not gonna know whose child this is. So that creates problems again, as far as the shechina resting on him, and it creates problems, as Rava had said, just by the fact that later on the kid is going to get married, and there could be potential problems with Arias and so on and so forth. So there's all of that. But even if we know after her first husband died, we know for a fact that she's pregnant, whether because she started showing early or because of Eliyahu HaNavi or because of an ultrasound or whatever. Nevertheless, we still have this consideration that we just said that we want to make sure that her first child is well taken care of. Okay. Then the Mishnah had continued that this rule of the 3 months applies achas besulois v'achas ba'ulois. We said that it applies, the Mishnah mentioned six things. It applies whether she's a basula or whether she's already had relations, whether she's divorced or widowed, whether she was married or an arusa. So the Gemara asks, hey, niu basulas, ve hey, niu arusas. isn't besolus, or what's the difference between besolus and arosis? On the face of it, it's the same thing. If she's a besola, then it means she would, if we're talking about, let's say, yibum, so or we're talking about any kind, we're talking about any kind of remarriage, we're saying, why would she be a besola? Because there was only erusin so far. Had there been nisuin, then they would have already had relations, but there would only been erusin, and therefore there wasn't yet. So why are we listing them separately? And the same thing, hey new ba'ulus for hey new nisuis. On the face of it, a woman who was married with full marriage nisuin is already a ba'ula. So there's no reason to list them out separately. So Rashi explains, in other words, that of necessity, how else would she be a Bistula Yavama if not for the fact that she was an Arusa? Marsha explains the reason why Rashi has to say that is because obviously there are many Bistulas who are not Arusis at all. But the point is, in other words, that at least as far as Yibum, if she's a Bistula, by definition, it means that she was only an Arusa. So why is the Mishnah listing them? So why is the Mishnah listing them separately? So the answer is, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Hachi Kama. What it means is like this. It's not giving six different cases. It's giving four cases. Achas besulis v'achas beulis. The rule of the 3 months applies whether she's still a besula or whether she had already had relations, and that applies in all four possibilities. Shenis amulor, shenis karishu, bein mina erusin, bein mina nisurin. Whether they were widowed or divorced, and whether either of those was from erusin or nisurin. So it's not six cases. We're saying besulis and beulis, and then we're clarifying what are the four possible cases of besulis and beulis, namely erusin versus nisuin and gerushin and gerushin versus misa. So that's what it means. Rashi actually, this Gemara is also an Eruvin, because now the Gemara is going to go on to discuss a point about Stam v'Achakach Machloikas, which also comes up in Eruvin. Rashi over there explains differently that what we're talking about over here is we're referring to how things were in her first marriage, and we're talking about now how it is how that affects the rules about her second marriage. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar le'ola be medrash. Rabbi Lazar one time did not come to the Beis Medrash. Later on, Ashkechei le'Rav Asi, he met up with Rav Asi, Omalei Mai Omer Rabbanan be medrash. What were the Chachamim talking about today in the Beis Medrash? Omalei, he tells him, Hochi Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Halacha k'Rabbi Yosi. Now, we had in our Mishnah three opinions. We had the Tanakhama had said that the Tanakhama had said that they always have to wait 3 months, no matter what. Whether she's a besula or who previously had relations, whether she's an amona or a grusha. Rabbi Yehuda had said that they were allowed to do erusin within the 3 months because erusin is not going to lead to bia. And if she was an arusa beforehand from her first marriage, then she's allowed to do marriage now. She's allowed to do full nisuin now because, again, she wasn't with her husband. She wasn't with her first husband because there was only erusin. Okay, he said an exception in Yehuda, because in Yehuda we said they would have the couple do yichud during the erusin. So there's a possibility of bia there, but ordinarily not. And Rabbi Yossi had said that they're all able to do erusin with the exception of an amana because during the 30 days after her husband dies, she's an avelus. So Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Asi told Rabbi Lazar that Rabbi Yochanan had said the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Lazar wonders about that. So you're telling me that the Tanakhama is not the Chachamim in general; it's only one Tana, because otherwise, if it was the Rabbim, Yochid v'Rabbim, halacha k'Rabbim, then how could Rabbi Yochanan be paskening like Rabbi Yosi? So does that imply that the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is only one Tana? And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. V'ha Tanya. Indeed, we learn in a Braisa. Hare shahosu redufa leilach lebeis avia. Suppose that this particular woman was redufa. Literally means she's chased after, but it means that she's very regularly visiting her parents' household. So she's often there. So shortly before her husband died, she was in her parents' house for a while. So now she can't have become pregnant from her husband because her husband wasn't there. Or if there was a quarrel, if there was fights between her and her husband, where therefore during the time before he died or divorced her, they didn't have relations. Or her husband was in jail, same thing. Or her husband was old, so he's not able to, he doesn't have Gvuras Anoshim anymore to be able to get her pregnant. Or he was sick, same thing. Or she was sick, and therefore she's not able to to bear the pressure of having relations. Or she miscarried after her husband died, and then of course we know at this point she's not pregnant. Or she was infertile. Rashi says it means that actually that she had a hysterectomy. Her uterus was actually removed. The Rif points out a couple of other possibilities. One of them being that we learned previously in the Gemara that if a woman was previously married and then she went 10 years without even thinking of remarrying and then she marries again, we learned at the end of the previous parak that she's not going to become pregnant. So that's another example of Akora over here. Actually, not the Rif. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points this out based on other sources. Anyway, so then you have that. Or she's old, she's not able to have children. Or she's a ktana, and again, she can't become pregnant. Or an Ilonis, which we're going to learn extensively about later in the Masechta. We talked about it briefly earlier, that she never develops the signs of Shtei Cyrus and the various other changes to a woman's body that normally take place. Therefore she's also infertile. Or she can't have children, which Rashi says, for example, she took some kind of potion, she took birth control or something, or she has some other kind of sickness that prevents her from having children. So nevertheless, Reb Meir says that she has to wait 3 months regardless. Reb Yehuda, or Hagoyis Hagro, changes it's supposed to be Reb Yosi, whatever, says that she can do Erusin or Nisuin right away, because in all these cases, we know that she's not pregnant. The point is, we see that Reb Meir is requiring the 3 months regardless. So therefore, when the Tanakhama says that she has to wait 3 months regardless, that would be only Reb Meir. So therefore, if it's Reb Meir against Reb Yosi, then the halacha can well be like Reb Yosi. However, Reb Chiya Ba'Abba says Reb Yechanan ended up changing his mind and saying the halacha is not like Reb Yosef. Omer Reb Yosef, if it's true that Reb Yechanan changed his mind, we must listen to Karma Hodebei. He must have done it on the basis of the Braisa that was taught in Kerem B'Yavne. Kerem B'Yavne was the yeshiva in Yavne. We know where Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai went to Das Vasyonus, you have the whole story in Gittin over there, how he predicted to Das Vasyonus that he's going to be the next emperor of Rome. And when sure enough, a messenger came shortly afterward and said that he is, and Das Vasyonus granted him 3 wishes. And one of them was, Ten li Yavne v'chachamah, give me Yavne and let the Chachamim be able to reestablish the Sanhedrin and the yeshiva over there, and Aspasionis granted it, so they had the yeshiva in Yavne. And it was called Kerem B'Yavne because they sat in rows, like the way that vines are arranged in a vineyard in rows. Why it is that Dafka, that one, was called Kerem, as opposed to, for example, afterwards when the yeshiva moved to other places, is not. I guess maybe the idea might be that maybe in other places, since they had to escape to there, they didn't have the chance to set it up as nicely, and therefore it wasn't in rows. But we don't really know. Anyway, whatever the case, so based on a braisa that was taught in Kerem B'Yavne is apparently why Rabbi Yechanan changed his mind. The Tanya, Omer Rabbi Shmuel b'nei Shmuel Rabbi Yechanan b'Breika, Shamayti mipi chachamim b'Kerem B'Yavne, I heard from the chachamim in the Kerem B'Yavne, in the yeshiva of Yavne, they all have to wait 3 months, because even in all these cases that we mentioned of this braisa, redufa, or that she and her husband were fighting, or her husband was in jail, etc., all these dozen or so cases that we mentioned, it's true that obviously she can't be pregnant. Nevertheless, the chachamim make gzeira, even in those cases, because if you allow them to marry during the 3 months, you might confuse it with the cases where it's otherwise, and then people are going to think that 3 months don't apply in general, and they're going to end up marrying within the 3 months, and they're going to have all the problems that we talked about on Amud Aleph. So it would be Gozru, She'enu Re'uya, Otu Re'uya, they made a gzera about when a woman can't be pregnant at this time, because it might be confused with the case where she could potentially be pregnant. So therefore, on that basis, Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind. And so Rabbi Yosef is saying, if in fact Rabbi Chiya bar Abba's report is true and Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind, it must be because he heard of that braisa. Well, the Gemara continues. So Rabbi Yumi says to Rabbi Zirka, when you go to visit Rabbi Abahu, Rami Lay, point out a contradiction to him based on the original thing that Rabbi Yochanan said. Now, fine, we said Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind. Maybe, at least according to Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. But how could Rabbi Yochanan, to begin with, have even thought to say that halacha is like Rabbi Yosi? Me, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, halacha to Rabbi Yosi. How could Rabbi Yochanan have actually said that? But Amr Rabbi Yochanan, halacha to Stam Mishnah. Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan himself say that the halacha is like a Stam Mishnah? Utnan. And we learn in our Mishnah, Stam Mishnah. So we have a Stam Mishnah over here. So and according to Rabbi Yochanan's own rule, that means the halacha is like that. So how could Rabbi Yochanan ever have said in the first place that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi? Omalei, so Zrika says, I don't even need to ask Rabbahu that. Whoever asked you that question, it wasn't concerned about his flour. In other words, the figure of speech is, imagine you take, for example, like this, you take wheat and you put it into a mill to grind it into flour. And usually you would be careful to make sure that you have only wheat in there and not inferior quality, not other kinds of things mixed in there. But here, let's say, imagine you have a person who just takes everything and throws it in there indiscriminately without caring whether it's wheat or something else. The same way Rabbi Zrika is telling Rabbi Yemiya, whoever thought of such a question is not thinking straight, is not thinking to make sure that he's asking a good question. He's just stammed throwing out a question without paying attention whether it's a good question or not. Because stam v'achakach machlokesi. Because in this case, you have a stam Mishnah, and then you have a machlokes. Because in the Mishnah, in the continuation of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Yehuda argue with the Tanakhama. So therefore, the ein halachak is stam. In that case, the halacha is not like the stam Mishnah. Here's a rule. When you have a machloikas in a Mishnah, and later on, Rashi says it's in the same Masechta or even in the same Seder, when you have later on a stam Mishnah, halacha kastam, then it means the halacha is like the stam Mishnah. Because we know that ultimately the Mishnayos were compiled by Rebbe. We know many of them existed long before Rebbe, but they were compiled into the form that we have them now by Rebbe. So therefore, if we have a machloikas, and later on in that Masechta, or Rashi says even in the same Seder, that you have later on a Stam Mishnah, it taking one side or the other of it, then it means that Rebbe figured out after he had compiled the first Mishnah, he figured out that the halacha should be like the one opinion, and therefore he established a Stam Mishnah like that. So therefore, then the halacha is like that. On the other hand, Stam v'achakach machlokas ain't halachakas Stam. On the other hand, if the other way around, if you have a Stam Mishnah and then a machlokas, like an Or Mishnah, then it means that halacha is not like the Stam. So therefore, it's not a very good question to ask how Rabbi Yochanan is violating his own rule of halachakas Stam Mishnah, because this is exactly the case when the halacha is not like the Stam Mishnah because there's a machlokas about it afterwards. So we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about what the rules are of Stam v'achakach machlokas. One thing is, first of all, Rashi had mentioned that this is only within one Masechta, or within one Seder. So if it's in different Sdarim, then we would not say these rules of Macholikas V'Achakach Stam, because the Gemara mentions elsewhere, Ein Seder the Mishnah, Rebbe did not necessarily teach the Mishnah, did not necessarily teach the individual Masechta, so the individual Sdarim, in the order in which we have them. So therefore, so if we have a machlokas in one and a stam in the other, we don't necessarily know what the order is. Tosfos over here mentions that it does have to be that it's not necessarily two different sdarim; it would actually be two different masechtas is enough to say ein seder the Mishnah. And therefore, if you have a stam in one and a machlokas in the other, the Gemara tells us in Baba Kama that there's a machlokas over there specifically regarding the three babas. Do we say that the three babas are considered one long masechta or not? But in general, outside of that, we would say that if it's across different masechtas and there's a stam in one and a machlokas in the other, we wouldn't necessarily say that the halacha is, we wouldn't necessarily say that that these rules of stam v'achakach machlokas apply, because we don't know in what order Rebbe taught the masechtas. Also, the Ramban in our Gemara points out that when we're saying over here, machlokas v'achakach stam, ein halachakas stam, doesn't always mean absolutely the case that the halacha is not like the stam. It means there's other considerations we have to bring in mind. So sometimes the halacha may end up being like the stam, even though there was machlokas after it. Stam v'achakach machlokas, rather. So even though usually we say ein halachakas stam, but sometimes the Ramban says there can be exceptions to that. Okay, so we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, of the ins and outs of Halacha Kestam Mishnah and Ein Halacha Kestam Mishnah. Shkoyach.